Hi, this is Aaron Newcomb, and on this episode of Floss Weekly, Dan Lynch joins me to talk about GitLab. It's more than just a code repository. You're not going to want to miss it. It's coming up right now on Floss Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly, episode 473 for February 28th, 2018, GitLab. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Kubernetes Engine on Google Cloud Platform. Learn more at g.co/getgke today. Hey, I'm Aaron Newcomb. Welcome to another great episode of Floss Weekly. You may be wondering where Randall is. Randall is actually out sick. He lost his voice, came down with the flu or something, so we hope that he feels better. But that means you're stuck with me. Aren't you lucky? So we're here to talk about open source software, as always. Got a great guest coming up. You're really going to enjoy it. But before we get to that, I want to introduce my lovely co-host, Dan Lynch. Dan, how's it going?
Hey, that was my surprised expression for people on the video when you said lovely. It's good to be back. Yeah, it's nice to be here. I hope we all, obviously, best wishes to Randall from all of us here for a quick recovery.
Yeah, what a pain that is. I've run into several people. You can even hear in my voice, I've got a little bit of it. So I hope it's not, I haven't been too sick, but I can start to hear a little bit of grumbliness down in my voice. Also, it's early. I just got up, so my voice is nice and deep. Dan, we haven't been on the show together in forever. I've been busy at work until recently anyway. Mm. And we just haven't had a chance to be on the show. So it's really nice to be back with you. I feel like this is like a reunion of sorts.
Yeah, we're getting the band back together. You're getting a piano
delivered. Yeah,
that's
delivered, right.
So we're sorted.
Apparently, I've got a piano coming. Just before the show starts, I get this message. We'll be there with the piano sometime before noon. Oh, okay. So if that you see me suddenly like act surprised and run off or something like that, you'll know why. Hopefully that doesn't happen though. We weren't supposed to say that. We're supposed to cover it up with editing. It might be interesting this morning. We'll just see what happens. Where are you speaking to us from, Dan?
Yeah, I'm talking to you from my little home studio. Viewers watching will see enough piano talk, but I've got a kind of electric piano behind me as well. So as far as I know, no one's coming to collect that or anything. Yeah, I'm in Liverpool in the UK, which at the moment is covered in snow. We've got a cold weather front come across from Siberia, so it's -4 where I am at the minute. That's Celsius. I know you guys do Fahrenheit.
And for those of us that aren't familiar with the area, I mean, that's fairly unusual, right?
Yeah, really unusual. We never get snow. Some parts of the country, so Scotland, which is traditionally a bit colder, it's further north, they've got -8, -10 in some places. So that's really unusual for us. But only the last few days. So last week it was sunny and it was, you know, +10 or +12. And now it's suddenly dropped like 20 degrees in some areas. So we're blaming the Russians. Apparently it's coming across from Siberia. So
yeah, that's odd. That's really weird. We had hail the other day here and we never get snow either. So I don't know. Maybe there's something, maybe we sent it over your way. Who knows?
Possibly. You'd have to send it a long way because they're calling it the beast from the east. So you must have sent it across Russia to us.
right. Yeah, sure. That's hilarious. That's really funny. For me, as far as I am, I'm in my secret lair here where I usually do these things from when I'm not at work. So I've got the books in the back. I've got all kinds of things. It's right out in front. I just actually was working this week on this little altimeter, rocket altimeter. I don't know if you can see that. There it is right. Excellent. There. Yeah, it's pretty cool. So I built the board and just yesterday I went down because I had to use the microscope because this is SMD to solder. There's the ESP 8266 on there. Really cool. So it hooks up, goes inside the nose cone of the rocket. You launch it up and then when it comes back, you log into a web page. It'll tell you how high it went. So it's pretty cool. Pretty cool stuff. But we're not here to talk about rockets. We're here to talk about cool open source software. And our guest today is from GitLab. I don't know. Do you know much about GitLab, Dan?
I did have a quick look. Luckily, I know a fair amount about Git, and I've used that a lot. So we'll be able to talk a lot about that. But it's kind of like I suppose we'll get into this with Sid when he comes on. But it's kind of for people to get a kind of easy overview. It's kind of similar to GitHub, although it's open in a lot more ways, self-hosted, all that sort of stuff. So we'll get into the differences. But yeah, it looks really cool. It also has a lot more project management stuff going on and other things you can bring in. So great for teams who are developing software, maybe in different locations around the world, or anybody who wants to plan and execute a project, really.
Yeah, and I think that last part is key, right? It's for all those people that are doing DevOps out there that need to iterate quickly. And what I like about it is they seem to be getting into deploying software, as you were alluding to there, and helping get these projects over the fence. And so I have a lot of questions about that. But before we get to our guest, we'd like to thank our sponsors. So let's talk about our sponsor today. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by the Kubernetes Engine on Google Cloud Platform. When you're building an application, you need it to be secure and always evolving. With Kubernetes Engine, developers can easily deploy containerized apps on a fully managed service from Google Cloud Platform. Google has been running production workloads in containers for more than 10 years, and they build the best of what they learn into Kubernetes Engine. Kubernetes Engine combines automatic scaling, updates, and reliable self-healing infrastructure with open source flexibility, to cut down on your deployment cycles and move your idea to production quickly and reliably. Kubernetes Engine also handles scheduling deployments for your workloads to maximize resource optimization so you can focus on your apps. And they do auto-scaling, which allows you to handle increased demand for your services and will scale back down during the quiet periods to save you money. Google is the only hyperscale cloud platform to offer an SLA for customers running on Kubernetes. It's also backed by experts on Google's security and reliability engineering team and is both HIPAA and PCI compliant. Worried about getting locked in? With Kubernetes Engine, you're free to take your workloads out and run them anywhere. Kubernetes is supported. Love it. You can learn more about Kubernetes Engine at g.co/getgke today. That's g.co/getgke. GKE. One more time, g.co/getgke. And we thank them so much for their support of Floss Weekly. Back to the show. Actually, if you don't know much about Kubernetes, we actually did a few episodes or a few different episodes of Floss Weekly on containers and Kubernetes. It's a great library that we're developing here of interviews with open source folks. So you might want to go take a look at that. If you don't know much about Kubernetes, that's a little bonus for you today. And speaking of bonus, we got a great bonus today. We're going to be joined by Sid Zebrangi. I hope I said that right. He's CEO of GitLab, and he's got a broad background in open source. So we want to bring him in right now. Sid, are you there?
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Hey, Sid. Good to talk to you this morning. Where are you speaking to us from?
San Francisco.
San Francisco, just down the road. Great. Well, it's great to talk to you. Why don't you give us a little bit of your background actually in the open source world before we get started talking about GitLab?
Sure. One of my first companies was kind of open source. It was a while ago, and I saw a GeoCities page for someone that was making infrared receivers, and it was 99. Or it was 97. And it was just the MP3 hype was getting started. People were, for the first time, playing music on their computers. And they wanted to hook it up to their stereo and skip to the next song. And this guy had a GeoCities page for a homemade infrared receiver. So you can skip to the next song on your computer with the infrared remote you already owned for your stereo. And he said on the page he wasn't selling them, but he was selling them on the local university marketplace. So I figured that if he took the time to announce that he wasn't selling them, there was probably demand. And I started buying those from him and selling them. I think the first one I sold, asking people to send dollar bills in an envelope. And because it was open source, it really took off. And then we made a business out of it. So that's how I earned money through my student years. I later on did different things. I built submarines and other things that doesn't have anything to do with open source. But I came back into programming and I fell in love with Ruby and Ruby on Rails. I became a developer. And then at some point I saw this project called GitLab, and it was 1 year old. It had 300 contributors at that time, and I opened up the code base and it was just beautiful. It was idiomatic Rails. It was very how you'd expect a Rails project to look, instead of a hobby project where people kind of try to do experimental things with their new things. So I was really excited. I posted on Hacker News, like, hey, do people want to use this as a service? Started GitLab.com. And that's how GitLab got going. It started as open source in 2011, and it was version control at the time. And now GitLab is grown. It's not just version control anymore. It is everything from planning an application, creating it, packaging it, releasing it, configuring it, and monitoring it, all in a single application, single data store, single interface. And that's taking off. It has a lot of organic adoption. Over 100,000 organizations are now using GitLab.
And tell me again, what year or when was GitLab actually first put into the public domain?
Yeah, so Dmitry, my co-founder, released it in 2011. And at that time, after a year, it had 300 contributors. By now, it has over 1,900 contributors. As a business, it really started in 2015 when we joined Y Combinator, an incubator for startups. We were 9 people at the time, and we're now 250 people helping the project.
That's awesome. Most people, when they think of Git, they think of either or Git proper, or they think of GitHub, which a lot of people use to host their projects. How is GitLab different? I think that was our biggest question, probably the biggest question in other people's minds too. When they see GitLab, GitHub, it's like, oh, are they the same thing for people that aren't, you know, in the ecosystem? So tell us a little bit about the differences between GitLab and GitHub.
Yeah, so we started off as an alternative to GitHub. So all the version control you'd expect. But GitLab, because of the contributions by others, it has an enormous feature velocity. So every month we have a new version with 2 or 3 great new features. And it's grown from just version control to also have great planning tools, including like portfolio management. It has CI/CD. Forrester just nominated GitLab as the premier CI tool in the market, so better than alternatives like Jenkins and Travis. And it also has like packaging. It comes with a container registry. It has release management. You can define different environments. And if you push your code, GitLab figures out what programming language it is. It builds it. It tests it. It tests the code quality of your code. It tests whether the code is secure, whether it contains vulnerabilities. It tests the performance. You can deploy it to different environments. You get if you pair it with, for example, Google Kubernetes Engine, which is sponsoring this show, which we think, by the way, is an excellent product. If you use that, you get a review app. So you can, for every change you made, for every branch you have kind of a staging environment with this, just that change. And it also does monitoring, because we think you shouldn't deploy into a black hole. You should get feedback about how it's performing. So out of the box, GitLab ships with Prometheus to get you those metrics.
Oh, that's fantastic. Prometheus is a great tool. So, I mean, it sounds like it has a lot of support for a lot of ancillary ecosystems or integrations with other products as well. You mentioned Prometheus and Google Container Engine. I'm assuming that the same is also true, not to pick any favorites, with Amazon and their upcoming Kubernetes service and Azure as well, or is it strictly Google?
Yeah, you can use GitLab with whatever infrastructure you like. So lots of our users are on bare metal. For example, GitLab Runner that runs CI, you can run that on like macOS. You can run it on IBM 360. It's ported to all kinds of different platforms. If you use virtual machines, GitLab CI and CD can auto-scale. So it can automatically instantiate more machines as it's needed with 20 different public and private cloud kind of providers. We think the future is clearly Kubernetes. So you can add Kubernetes clusters to your projects and groups in GitLab, and you can say, look, this cluster is for my staging, this is for my production, and GitLab will make sure it runs the tests and deployments in the appropriate cluster.
That's fantastic. How difficult would you say it is to set this up? I know one of the things that people like about GitHub and other projects are that, you know, they're very easy to set up and get going with, and there's very little overhead. What about GitLab? How you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, I don't know if that's fair. You know, how easy is it to get things up and running? Is there a lot of overhead and configuration needed?
So, if you use just the version control, it's comparable to for example, GitHub. I think where GitLab is unique is that if you use it as a kind of as a pass, if you just push your code and let GitLab do the rest, it's a magical experience. You don't have to have all these other tools. You don't have to have any CI tool, and a deployment tool, and a configuration tool, and a security tool, a testing tool, and a code quality tool. It's all there, and it runs out of the box. And I think that's a really great experience. Another thing that's really great about GitLab is that you can also self-host it. So lots of our users choose to self-host, and we've invested a lot of time to make that a great experience. For example, a couple of months ago, I went in a kind of live-streamed video, I went through that experience again to remind everyone in GitLab like how important that is a very, very good experience. And now we're focusing a lot on making that experience of adding a cluster and using Kubernetes to make that seamless. My co-founder Dimitri is going to spend the entire second quarter of 2018 on just making that better.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I mean, Kubernetes has really taken off, obviously. You know, we call it the de facto standard at this point. I know there's a couple analysts that are going to scream at me about saying de facto, but it really is. I mean, you know, it's everywhere. It's everywhere. I mean, Docker, you know, announced support for it. Amazon's coming out with their service. And Azure already has a service, and Google now has a service. And they've been deeply involved in Kubernetes from the very beginning. And it seems like everybody is moving away from the other orchestration tools into Kubernetes. So we'll see what happens. But for right now, it definitely seems like the direction that people are going. So it's fantastic that you're actually working on building out Kubernetes and making it even your integrations even stronger. What about the trends in the industry? What trends is GitLab trying to address? I know that, you know, when I was at New Relic, we saw a huge trend in enterprise companies shifting away from waterfall to DevOps. Is GitLab in the middle of that somehow? Do they help with that change in development methodologies?
Yes, for sure. If you open our homepage, the first line you'll see is complete DevOps. People acknowledge that agile is great for development, but you don't just want the development to be agile. You want the QA to be agile. You want the operation team to be agile. You want the security team to be agile. You want the planning to be done in an agile fashion. So you got to have a broader scope when you iterate quickly. So we want to make the entire scope from planning to monitoring the effect in production. We want to enable that. And with GitLab, there's over 100,000 companies kind of putting their best practices into GitLab and having it all as one seamless experience in one single application. And that is appealing to a lot of our users and customers, because what they used to have was 10 different applications that they have to integrate themselves. They were responsible for making that happen. And they were different applications. Like, if I want to see how something was doing, monitoring it, I had to go to another app. And that was run by operations. I might not even have access. And my deployment tool didn't know how the monitoring was affected. What we'll introduce this year in GitLab is automatic rollbacks. If the monitoring says this is not going well, in your merge request, you'll see like, hey, this is a metric that went wrong. And GitLab rolled it back automatically for you. Things like that you can only do if it's a single application. And it just takes the tediousness out of a lot of things. In GitLab, if you push your container from your CI build to the container registry, the container registry knows who you are, knows what your authorizations are. You don't have to create a project. You don't have to pass credentials around. It's a seamless experience.
That's fantastic. I mean, that's a huge time saver, which is really the ultimate problem, I think, with DevOps when you're developing more quickly and throwing out revisions of code more quickly. You have to be able, you can't spend time logging into different tools and trying to reconcile, you know, what this tool is saying versus what this tool is saying, or did the deployment actually happen? I don't know. I got to go check this other tool. Like, that's super frustrating. I mean, there comes a time, I think, when these point products lose their effectiveness because they're only solving one little piece of the puzzle instead of really trying to address everything holistically. So that's fantastic.
That is the big problem. The tools are optimized, but you reached kind of a local optimum, mm-hmm. where the tools themselves are pretty good. But the problem is the handoffs between the different tools. First, I do the code, and then I do the quality checks, and then I go to security, and then I go to operations. That introduces lag, latency. And that's why people cannot have that cycle from planning to monitoring as fast as they want to. We think the future is concurrent DevOps, where from the first moment you plan something, everyone is on the same page and everyone can work at the same time. So it's not that you hand off your code to the security people. No, the security people are able to see what potential security issues are in your code from the first moment you push. And that's all to make sure that people can work at the same time. And with GitLab, people can reduce the time it takes to do the DevOps lifecycle by a factor of about 3 on average. So, and if you can make that faster, you can get the feedback of your deploy and you can base your next step on what you've learned. So making that faster, that is why people switch to GitLab.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like what you're doing, and the fact that you're broadening beyond just managing the code to actually solving some of these other problems. We talked about comparing you to GitHub. I mean, who else would you say are your competitors in this space, or who else would our audience maybe compare you with to get a better idea of what's in this particular market?
Yeah, so typical competitors are GitHub and Atlassian. But we really think that, and it's two different things, where Atlassian has kind of a suite of tools. They don't cover everything. Like, they don't have packaging, they don't have monitoring, but they have options for a lot of the other phases. But what you get is different apps. It's not a single application. You got a different interface. You get those handovers between the tools. It's not a consistent experience, and not everyone is on the same page. What GitHub has done is they have a marketplace model where you don't only have to use GitHub, but you also need Travis CI, and you need to verify your security items. You need Docker Trusted Registry. You need Codefresh for releases. You need all these different things. And that's what we're trying to solve with GitLab. Not have a bunch of tools that in the end you're responsible for integrating together, but a single application where it surfaces the relevant information at the right time. If you look at a GitLab merge request, it will tell you today, hey, you did this merge, but because of that, the CPU increased by over 20%. You might want to have a look at that. And I think that's really powerful, that actionable information at the right time.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. I mean, as you say, having that kind of feedback real time is really what you need. Traditionally, that might have been someone in another team shouting at you or something. Might still be, I don't know. But, you know, the kind of the server guys going, what the hell's happened to our server load?
Exactly.
Yeah, so I wanted to ask a bit about, I was looking at comparing, so it's good that we're on this area actually, because I was looking at comparing GitLab with other things that are out there. And one of the things I noticed about GitLab is you guys proudly call yourselves open core, which can be a bit of a controversial term. But I was reading a blog post that you actually wrote about this, Sid, so I thought I'd better give you a chance to kind of explain to people what you mean by that and how it works for you in your kind of your company, if you like.
Yeah. We're an open core company. So we're not all of our code is open source and not all of our code is proprietary. There's a version of GitLab that is completely open source, but there's also additional features. And if you want to use those features, you have to get a subscription with us. And obviously that is a fine line to walk, like what goes in the open source version, etc. But we've tried all the other models. We've tried paying for support And that didn't work because you want to make support, you want to make sure that people don't need support. So we had that, and people after a year said, we haven't used any support because the product just works. You have companies that charge for installations. Well, we spend a lot of time making sure our installation is great. If you use our omnibus packages, it's a great experience. So people didn't need that either. Then we did like paid feature development. So people paid for making new features. And we had like people asking for the same feature. We thought, great, you can split the money now. And they said, oh, no, we can't do that because I'll just wait for the other person to pay for it. And then I'll just wait. So people weren't incentivized to do it. We got the problem that a lot of purchasing departments weren't set up to even pay for development. So you said, hey, look, help us pay for this feature. And they said, well, if it's Ruby programming, we have contractors to do all our programming. So let them do it. And it ended up costing us a lot of time to kind of educate these people who weren't even Ruby programmers on the project and have them be able to contribute. And then there's a lot of things that people don't normally pay for, like improving the performance, improving the security, packaging, documentation, refactors. Those are all things that it was really hard to find companies that did it. So we switched to this model of licensed software, which is familiar to a lot of companies. They're used to it, and it works a lot better. And now the hard thing is deciding for every new feature, where does it go? Like if it's in the open source edition, we never take it out. But of new features, we look at it and we say, look, is this useful? Is this also a thing that is very commonly used by smaller organizations? Or is this sweet spot for this feature larger organizations? Not that smaller organizations don't use it, but it's really beneficial if you have a lot of people. And based on that, we make it open source or proprietary.
Yeah, definitely. And one of the things I thought was really interesting when I was looking at this, I know that the term open core can be a bit controversial in a lot of areas. But I think it may have even been a tweet or something, there was just a little quote from someone at the company, it may have even been yourself, which I thought was really, really kind of prescient, which is that, you know, GitLab is open core, GitHub is proprietary. You know, it's completely closed source pretty much. So really, you know, you're already way more open source than a lot of the competing things that are out there, which is great. And you got the self-hosting, which we talked about, so people can self-host. Because I was just thinking about business models there, where you were saying about how do we monetize this? Because you can self-host, you've made it self-hostable. You haven't got the ability then to say, well, we host it for you. You pay us to host it. I mean, you have got that, but people have always got the option to go, well, thanks for that, but I've got my own servers and I'm going to do it myself. So yeah, I completely get the point of how it can be contentious, this kind of thing.
Yeah, if something is open source, you should be able to host it yourself. And I think in order for us to compete with the Atlassians and the GitHubs, it was necessary to have a business model to be able to entice people to move to it. But it also enables us to help open source projects move to it. So GNOME and Debian are now transitioning to self-hosted GitLab, and we're trying to help them everywhere we can to make that a reality.
That's awesome. So there you go. So you've got some of the pillars of the community will soon be propped up by GitLab, if that makes sense. I'm using the pillar metaphor in my head too much, I think. When I looked at the site, you've got, I mean, we mentioned the licensing and so on, and you've got basically two main versions, the community edition and the enterprise edition. What's the difference between them, and what would make me go for one or the other?
Yeah, so the community edition contains everything to do what I just talked about. So that whole life cycle from planning to monitoring, that's all part of the community edition. What the enterprise edition contains is stuff that is more useful if you're a larger company. So an example would be the community edition. You can log in via your LDAP server if you have that as a company directory. With the enterprise server, you can also sync groups from the LDAP server to GitLab. So if you're in the iOS development team on the LDAP server, you're in the same team automatically in GitLab instead of having to do that manually. Those are the type of features we put in the enterprise edition.
Yeah, excellent. And Presumably, I mean, this is going to sound like a really silly question. I was going to say, if I start with the community edition, it's easy for me to transition to the enterprise one and kind of, you know, upgrade, I'm assuming.
Yeah, what we've done is by now, by default, you get our enterprise edition, but you kind of tend to run only the open source code. And then if you want to use the rest of the code, you don't have to do a reinstall. You can upgrade in the app and get a license key.
Excellent. And you talked a bit about self-hosting and so on, and you know, making a video of yourself actually setting this up for self-hosting as well. If I were to try and self-host it, what kind of support would I need on my servers? What kind of, obviously I'm going to need Ruby by the sound of it. Is there a packages or meta packages or anything for major, say like Debian or other Linux distributions I could use to help install?
Yeah, you should be able to do it, including all the dependencies, in about 5 to 10 minutes. So if you go to aboutgitlab.com/installation, you can find our packages. And these are called Omnibus packages. And Omnibus is a project by Chef. They make configuration management software. And it used to be called Fatty as a code name, because it installs all the dependencies as well. So this package installs the right Ruby version, Postgres, Nginx, all the other things that make GitLab run. And it tunes them so that all the settings are optimal for GitLab. So that makes it really easy to go from a fresh server to having GitLab installed in a few minutes. And we got packages for Ubuntu, Debian, CentOS, OpenSUSE, and Raspberry Pi. So most major platforms are supported with this Omnibus package. And it's I think that's one of the secrets why GitLab took off, because this is such a good experience. We just introduced about a week ago Let's Encrypt support, so that you can easily set up HTTPS with these packages as well. And we just want to make sure that the only thing you have to do is add that packaging server, do an apt-get for the package, and then everything runs. You don't have to bother with configuration. The installation should be the same seamless single application experience that using GitLab is.
That sounds awesome. I mean, that's just the sort of thing that you want as someone trying to set up the server, obviously. And I think the really cool thing is that obviously you guys you're using this product yourself as well. So you're kind of eating your own dog food, if that's the right term I think they use.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're experiencing what it's like to set this up, and then going, how do we make this easier for next time? And then you can pass that on to people who are self-hosting.
Yep. Yeah, and on GitLab.com, we run the same version of GitLab, so that any changes we make there to improve performance automatically go back to our users. So if you install GitLab, it can handle the scale. It can handle hundreds of thousands of users.
And you mentioned that, I mean, it's based, I was looking at some of the history of the project. It's based on Ruby and Go as well. So you mentioned that you liked Ruby on Rails, and historically you'd had some use of that. Why was that chosen as the kind of platform? Was it just that you liked it, you'd used it, or were there some technical points to it that you thought would help?
Yeah, so my co-founder Dimitri chose it when he started a project because he wanted to learn it and get better at it. He was a PHP developer. He was living in the Ukraine, and none of his friends were doing Ruby, but he thought it was the future. So he started it in Ruby on Rails. And he did a super good job. Over time, there were some things where performance really matters. For example, Gitly, our libraries or our server for the Git repositories, it's written in Go because it tends to have a better performance, and the multi-threading is really nice. And then for the front end, we settled on Vue. So the front end pieces that you interact with a lot, we're now making into kind of single page applications. So that combination of using whatever makes sense pragmatically is working really well for us.
And I was interested when you said that you've got packages for the Raspberry Pi. I'm just wondering who runs their whole DevOps thing on a Raspberry Pi. That sounds really cool, actually. Maybe a little risky, but also quite cool. Do many people use the Raspberry Pi edition, do you know?
Yeah, people use it. GitLab kind of wants a bit more memory than is on a Raspberry Pi, but it still runs, and people run kind of a home server. They have their repos on there, and it has the same backup tools that regular GitLab has, so it should be safe.
So how many people are involved in the kind of development? Because you must have quite a team of developers behind this, I would think.
Yeah, so over 1,900 people contributed to GitLab. In the last release, we had over 90 improvements made, contributed by people that don't work for GitLab, the company. And at GitLab, there's about 100 engineers that contribute to GitLab.
Excellent. So you've got involvement from the community a bit as well, which also links back to our whole open source benefits kind of thing before.
Yeah, and it's not just code. It's also all of our features that we're thinking about, our entire roadmap, even the features for the proprietary edition, they're all on a public issue tracker. So people chime in there with their use case. So it's really great. Like if we talk to someone and they have a need, we open up an issue and everyone discusses there. Just before this podcast, I was discussing with a contributor that's interested in mailing list functionality. And I'm very passionate about that because for projects that are still like SourceForge, a mailing list would be a great addition. And we were discussing that, and it can be anyone. Some people started GitLab and they say like, oh, I got all these instructions from this team member I cannot find on the team page. And then we're like, are you sure it's a team member? It might just be someone that's really passionate about the subject and is trying to contribute. So our mission is everyone can contribute, and we're being really open and transparent and allowing everyone to chime in both for the code, but also for the roadmap and what features are coming up.
So if people do want to contribute, do you have a contributor agreement that they have to sign or anything before they do that?
So we used to have this agreement where you kind of signed over the copyright to us. And then Debian moved to GitLab and they said, well, this really doesn't work. What we want is a developer certificate of origin, a DCO, where you keep the copyright yourself, but you just say, hey, I really made this. I own the copyrights on it. And I'm licensed. Hey, I'm okay with having it licensed under, in our case, the MIT XPath license. And so we changed that out. We had our lawyer review the things. We changed that out and made the Debian people happy with contributing to GitLab.
Excellent. And it's, I mean, they must be, it must have been quite well embraced by the community and so on. Because, I mean, as you mentioned, like Debian, for example, is historically a very conscientious project, for want of a better word, about things to do with licensing and so on. So, I mean, that's a really good sign that they, you know, they're happy with this.
Yeah, we were really happy with that. And obviously, it's not just Debian contributing, benefiting from this. Everyone that now contributes to GitLab retains the copyright on their code. And I think, and that's a better way, and that's how open source should work.
So we've got a question from the chat room, sort of, not really. Randall chimed in. Randall Schwartz chimed in with the question. He wants to know: are there tools to migrate my entire setup from GitHub to GitLab? Can I? Is it easy to fork over what I'm doing from one platform to another, or Atlassian, or any of the other ones?
Yeah, for sure. We got importers for 7 different platforms, but the one that imports from GitHub, because that is a really common case, is really good. So it imports not just the repositories, not just the wikis, but also your milestones, your users, your labels, your comments. So it's a really good importer. If you do it from GitHub Enterprise, self-hosted, it works beautifully. If you do it from github.com, sometimes they throttle the API a bit, so you got to give it a bit more time. But it can import in really high fidelity. So totally recommend that.
Yeah. Also, I'm taking a look at your website, your customer website specifically. I mean, you've got some fairly big names on here, some fairly big logos. I think you mentioned it before. Some great customer stories, but you know, I see Comcast on here, Reddit we mentioned before, Sony, NASDAQ. I mean, these aren't small shops. Talk about scale for a minute. I mean, how do you scale when you're doing? I mean, I know it. I can't give details, but like when I was at New Relic, we had customers that were doing 15,000 commits a day, which seems crazy, but that's the world we live in now. So how do you handle a scale of a project like that?
Yeah. So what was surprising to me, I started GitLab.com first, but it was the enormous like Fortune 10 companies already running GitLab self-hosted that really surprised me. And we've embraced that and we've made it work for them. That's why the code that runs on GitLab.com is the same code they use. I talked to a huge user yesterday. They have over 12,000 users on GitLab. They download 15 to 20 terabytes of code a day, like Git clones from that installation. It's just a massive adoption. If you Google GitLab, is it any good? You'll find some stats from other companies that say of the self-hosted Git installations, they see GitLab there at least 2/3 of the times. So 2/3 of the companies self-hosting Git use GitLab for it. And that is all the names you'd expect.
Wow. Wow. That's fantastic. Sometimes it's hard for individual or, you know, developers or developers working at smaller companies to grasp the scale in terms of why this type of software is suddenly becoming very, very important for people. And I think it's the move to the cloud, I think, is really accelerating the speed of development that's happening. Would you agree with that? Are there other industry trends that are kind of leading towards us getting to this point where it's just so fluid and so fast paced? Are there other things going on, or is it mostly the cloud and containers?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think every company is becoming a software company, and the pace of business is accelerating. And to move faster as a business, therefore you need to improve the pace at which you deliver software. So getting that DevOps lifecycle, making that faster by working concurrently instead of doing those handovers is essential. And I think that's why GitLab's adoption is greatly increasing.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, we're about to wrap up here. It's been a great conversation so far, but I did want to give you the opportunity to bring up anything that perhaps we've missed or something that you wanted to mention in terms of like, you know, maybe even before we get to that, maybe we should talk about what's coming up. Like, what features are you working on now that you might want people to know about it, if you can tell us?
Yeah, well, I can tell you because our entire roadmap is public. So if you go to aboutgitlab.com/direction, you'll find all our upcoming features. Things that I'm super excited about, the Gemnasium integration. We acquired this company called Gemnasium that has the best database for vulnerabilities in open source software. And we're integrating that very closely with GitLab. Another thing is external repositories. GitLab is used a lot for CI and CD. But until now, you had to also host your code on GitLab. But we want people to be able to adopt any part of GitLab they want. We want you to give the parts you want instead of forcing you to adopt all. So with external repositories, you can have your code on GitHub, but then use the best CI/CD in the world to on GitLab. So I'm really excited by that change. And then the bigger picture is something called Complete DevOps, where we're adding a lot of new features to GitLab, like error logging, processing your log files. So going beyond just metrics and doing things like that and APM, that's a bigger vision. We just had a blog post about kind of how that would look. And I think that's a really exciting thing too. And you'll see stuff coming out every month that works towards that that vision.
Wow. Wow, that's awesome. Well, it sounds like really good stuff coming over here. Now let me give you that opportunity. Now that we know about your roadmap, let me give you that opportunity to let us know if there's anything else that we should have brought up and we forgot to, or anything you want to mention. You know, discount codes, all that kind of good stuff that people like. Anything like that is fine.
Well, I've got an awesome discount code. You can use GitLab for free forever. By just going to it, and that's both for self-hosted and .com. I thought it was a really interesting conversation, and one thing we touched on is, and that you said, is like monitoring. I need to go to another application for monitoring, and I think that's a really interesting subject. We see a lot of companies that have moved to continuous delivery, where every change they make with one button, they can deploy it, but they're not moving to continuous deployment. They do not deploy every change. And we think that is because of a couple of reasons that we can address. It is because they have to babysit the deployment and watch for errors. And we're working on incremental rollouts, where slowly you increase the number of users that see a new version. And we're working on those automatic rollbacks, where you can see what is erroring. The GitLab sees what is erroring out and it rolls it back. You don't have to watch that. You can just rely on GitLab to do it. And I think that's going to be really interesting to bring more companies to continuous deployment.
Yeah, because that's a huge problem, right? The time that it takes you to detect that issue and then get in and roll it back yourself. I mean, you know, how much business would you have lost, for example, if it was something that affected your ability to do transactions, right? That's real money for a lot of these companies. So that sounds like an awesome feature. Yep. So fantastic. Well, thanks for joining us today. There are a few questions that I have to ask in Randall's absence that we always ask every guest. The first one is, what is your favorite scripting language?
Can I say, I think I don't want to make anyone think less of Ruby, but I think Ruby is a great scripting language, and I've written a lot of short scripts in it, and it's how Matt intended Ruby in the beginning. So I think Ruby is my favorite scripting language.
Okay, that is perfectly acceptable, and that's kind of what we assumed, given the way GitLab was developed. But the second question I always have to ask is, what is your favorite text editor?
So, I'm using VS Code. I see everyone switching to it, and I'm really proud that we just added it to GitLab. So, in GitLab, you now get the web IDE. And it is the complete VS Code IDE inside GitLab working on that repo. And it's a great way to make a quick edit to a project you don't want to clone and check out locally.
Wow, that's cool. I'm looking it up right now because I haven't used it. And it's one that I am going to go check out. I typically use Atom or something like that. So that's really cool. Wow. We always hear about things on this show and then we're like, okay, forget it. We're going to go check it out. Time out. We got to go check this out and install it. Well, GitLab is certainly one of those projects that I'm sure a lot of people that are doing this type of work are going to go check out. And I really, really appreciate your time coming on the show today to give us an overview. And wow, it sounds like you're really doing really exciting things. So yeah, thanks for coming on. It was great to talk to you, Sid.
Pleasure was all mine. Thank you very much for having me.
All right.
Thanks, Sid.
So that was GitLab. Dan, any initial reaction to GitLab? What do you think?
Yeah, it sounds great. I mean, I hope I didn't sound too much like I was going bad cop there, because I knew people would ask about open, because they use the term open core, and it's got this weird, I know it has a bad connotation for a lot of people, but actually, one thing that Sid kept saying, which I wanted to give him the opportunity to say, basically, was that it's the same code running, you know, on between the versions, if you like. So it's not, it's not a kind of a bad open core kind of implementation. That makes sense. But anyway, off of the political points, it sounds like a great tool. Yeah. And I'm going to have to look at it myself. You just mentioned that we always talk about this, but I mean, I think we all probably these days use Git anyway, but I have used separate things for deployment and all these other things, and then you know, monitoring and so on. And I can totally see why this would be a real, real improvement. As you said, you just do not want downtime for any reason. And you know, if this helps with that, which it seems to, then it's all good by me.
Yeah. So eliminating downtime, tool consolidation, and just the efficiencies that you get from having integrated CI/CD into your tool chain, into your workflow rather, is huge. It's the reason that when we first, it was weird because when we first started talking about this, about having them on the show, we had customers that were using them as opposed to GitHub, and I always wondered why. And this is exactly why. This is what they need to do. So some of the things that he mentioned, I was so excited when I started researching the show. We don't always do great research. I'll be the first to admit, I don't always look up go to every website until maybe a few minutes before the show starts, just because I'm busy. But this one, I actually had time, and so I went out and looked at it, and I was so impressed. I actually applied for a job there. So maybe I've got it.
Oh,
in
wow.
Now. I don't know. Yeah, I was so excited about it. I'm like, wow, this company is doing fantastic stuff. They're the future. I want to be involved with it. So we'll see how that goes. But that's how excited I was about it. There is some really, really cool stuff that they're doing. And like I said, if you're only because I've been working in this space for a while, I know companies that this is their major pain point is, you know, being efficient, being able to deliver that 15,000 commits a day is a huge amount of pressure. And for companies that are moving from the old method to the new methodology, they see a lot of value in it, but they have a lot of problems in actually converting to it. And something like GitLab will really help them do that. So, yeah, I didn't want to gush too much when we were doing the interview, but I was like,
I was just going to say, almost a job interview for you there as well. And so let's hope it went well.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, I'll call Sid up afterward. Hey, Sid. No, I'm just kidding. No, that's besides the point. But that's how excited I am about it. I think it's really, really cool. Mm. Talking about being excited about things, we should talk about what's coming up in the future on Floss Weekly. Mm-hmm. It's always a challenge to do those transitions. We've got some great shows coming up. We're going to be talking about Gitcoin. That'll be coming up on March 7th. You can imagine what that's about. Cryptocurrencies, all the big hotness right now. And then we'll be talking about SUSE, which is coming up on March 11th. We'll find out what's new in SUSE land. And then shortly after that, on March 21st, we've got Etsy Viper Builder. So if you're involved in Etsy, you may be interested in tuning in for Etsy Viper Builder on March 21st. And then it looks like on March 28th, the text is small. Oh, we're going to be talking about Rust, rustlang.org. I know that will be one that I'm sure Randall is excited about. A lot of discussion around Rust these days. I haven't tried it myself. Have you tried Rust at all, Dan, in your...
I've got to be honest. I haven't really. I've had a brief look, but I haven't tried it in anger, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah. So Benjamin Striegel, I hope I said that right, or Striegel, will be on March 28th to talk about Rust. So I'm going to tune in for that one for sure, even if I'm not hosting, because I know there's just a lot of buzz going on about Rust and a lot of good. They use I can't think of what they are right now, but they use interesting nomenclature, like from like Rust-oleum and stuff like that. I think when they're as they call their different parts of the language and things. So it's so pretty interesting stuff. So that's what's coming up. How about you, Dan? What's going on with you? Anything that you want to tell listeners about?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't expecting to be on today. It's quite fortuitous, really. I've been talking on the last few shows that I've been on about an event that you'd probably be interested in, actually, Aaron, which is Liverpool MakeFest, which is a great event. We have about 3,000-4,000 people in the library, Central Library in Liverpool. It's a really nice, big event over four floors. Doing all kinds of making from, you know, the techie side of things to just straight crafts and stuff like arts and crafts and just sharing knowledge, really. And your little rocket project that you talked about before would be perfect. So I don't think, unfortunately, we can afford to fly you over for the event, but maybe you could send the rocket over and we'll catch it at this end. I'm sure air traffic control and like security services will have no problem with that. If I just send us a rocket, it's fine.
It's fine.
So, yeah. So if you want to, Yeah, they're small, exactly. So if you want to come along, it is a free event. It's totally free to attend. If you Google or your search engine of your choice, Liverpool MakeFest, you'll find it. We've got obviously all the social media stuff sorted. I'm doing a blog there as well, which you can read, interviewing different makers and stuff. I'm going to be winding up and cranking up into more kind of posts and hopefully maybe some podcast interviews and things with makers and other people. So that should be good. So yeah, go and find out more about that. It's on June the 30th this year in Liverpool in the UK. So if you can make it to this part of the world, then please do and come along and join us. And all the information's on the website. And besides that, just find me on Twitter or other places and we can talk about it.
So how's this for a coincidence? We just found out yesterday that we are actually doing. So I also produce, so you call yours Maker Fest. We call ours a mini Maker Fair. We produce one here in conjunction with the Makerspace that I run. And we just found out we're going to be hosting it over at the county fair, the Solano County Fair on June 30th. June 30th is July 1st. Yeah, so coincidence. we must be in sync somehow because we're both doing events, Maker events on the same day. That's hilarious.
Yeah, we've had some people from a Makerspace in Germany, in Berlin, who want to link up with us live on the day and possibly one in China. So maybe if I can hook up some kind of live link, we can have a global spanning maker, you know, event kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. Berlin, cool. Is that C-Lab?
Maybe. I can't remember now. There's some huge Makerspace.
Yeah, I've been there. I've been there, actually. Yeah. It's a great, great makerspace. Or actually, I tried to find it. I couldn't find it when I was looking for it. But I talked to the folks there. It's a great, great makerspace. So that's fantastic that you have them involved. We'll have to chat offline, and we'll have to help each other out as we plan for our events. That'll be awesome. In terms of the stuff that I'm working on, I always take the opportunity to make sure you know about my book, Linux for Makers. You can find that wherever books are sold. Maybe not, actually, but wherever good books are sold, you'll be able to find that on Amazon and in bookstores and things like that. So please check that out. If you're a maker and you're new to Linux, like you just picked up a Raspberry Pi, you don't know anything about the command line, this book will help you get from zero to hero. And then also, I just mentioned the Maker Faire. You can also take a look at Benicia Makerspace if you happen to be in the northern California, like north of San Francisco type area. We've got a great makerspace, and we're getting a lot of interest from folks that unfortunately were affected by the tech shop closure here in the States. So if you're one of those, or if you're just a maker and you want a great space and great community to be involved with, I encourage you to check that out as well. In terms of this show, you can always join us live, live.twit.tv, and you can join the chat on the IRC, irc.twit.tv, and you can also take our survey. So it is time for the yearly Twit survey, and we want to hear from you so we can serve you better. So head over to twit.tv/survey and make your voice heard. I know that it helps everybody in the back office at the Twit Studios figure out what they can do better. So they really do take a read of the survey. So they're not just doing it for fun. They really want to know your opinion. So do check out that survey. If you haven't filled it out yet, please do. And that'll help them out. And you've helped us out just by being a great audience. We've really enjoyed having you on the show. Until next time, this is Floss Weekly. Woo!